have a question for you. If a better life were available, would you want it? I mean, like, better, like, maximum hope, maximum joy, acceleration, like, top of the top of the top. By the way, I'm Kyle. I'm a pastor. This is Crossroads Church. I know a lot of people are confused at what a pastor is and what a church is all about. It's really simple. We're here to help people like you have that kind of better life. Now, as a pastor, I've heard thousands of people's stories. And this today is all about the one thing that, in my experience, is most likely holding you back from that kind of life. I also happen to know because it's been the one thing holding me back from that life again and again. And I've had to learn what to do about it. Now, before I tell you what it is, I'm going to make an assumption about you, about how you just answered that question from just a second ago, that you said yes, you would want that kind of life, that if it were possible, you'd want the full life, the transcendent life, to know what it's like to live on top of the mountain. Good news. That's exactly the life that Jesus wants you to have. He said this in John 10, verse 10. Jesus said, "I have come that they," that's you, "may have life and have it to the full life." It's amazing. But there's this one somewhat troubling fact. I know very few people, Christians included, who would say that they honestly have the full life. See, everyone I talk to can usually imagine like a fuller life. They're like, oh, I can imagine my bank account could be a little bit more full. I got a little bit better of a house, a little better job, a little better relationships. I can always have something fuller, something bigger. So my question is, if you and me having life to the full is the mission of Jesus, how come so few of us actually have it? Like, is he bad at his mission? You know, like, does Jesus suck at his job? Or is there something that we're missing? Today, I'm going to give you a big part of what I think is the answer to that question. You got to hang with me. Actually, to start this, I wrote a little book. It's a children's story just for you. It's a little book that, here it is. Yep. Okay. It's a little book called Said No One Ever. Now, do you know how kids' stories always have like a moral buried deep in there? Like some kind of deep hidden message inside that you're supposed to uncover or whatnot? I never understood any of those. So this one's going to be super easy to find. Let's read the story. Starts like this. One day, Timmy and his little sister Susie playing out in their yard. Timmy noticed something over the mountains beyond their yard. Yeah, that's right. There are mountains beyond their yard. "Look at that," said Timmy. "That's amazing." "What?" said Susie. Timmy lifted his arm and pointed at the distant mountains. There was a bright flash of light and sparks and fireworks bursting behind it. "That is amazing," said Timmy. "Let's go." "We can't go over there," said Susie. We can't do that."
Well, why not?" asked Timmy, confused.
"Because," said Susie, "it'd be scary over there. Geez, why have they explained everything to you, Timmy? I'm only 5 years old." Just then a butterfly flew by. And Timmy looked at the mountain and looked back at his sister. "Susie," he said, "I don't mean to speak in hyperbolic terms, but I think what's on the other side of the mountain might be more amazing than the butterfly just flew by. That's how amazing it could be. I actually believe that, and we should go." "No," said Susie, "no way, we can't go." "Why not?" asked Timmy, who was starting to get frustrated. "Because," said Susie, "Timmy, use your head. Hello, there could be monsters on those mountains." "Monsters?" said Timmy. "Susie, I'm 6 years old, okay? I'm your big brother. I don't believe in monsters anymore. I mean, come on, you're trying to fool me, talking about Bigfoot and the abominable snowman," said Timmy. He wasn't quite sure how to spell abominable, has lots of letters. He's only 6 years old, so, you know, cut him a break. "I'm not scared of those kind of monsters." "I'm not talking about those monsters," said Susie. "I'm talking about the really scary monsters, Timmy."
What scary monsters?" said Timmy.
"The ones that Mommy and Daddy don't want us to know about," said Susie. "The ones that they're scared about." "It's ridiculous," said Timmy. "Mommy and Daddy aren't scared of any monsters. They're the toughest people in the whole wide world. Never scared of any monsters. That's ridiculous."
"Yes, they are," said Susie. "Yes, they are. I can tell you what their names are. They have scary names, Timmy. They're really scary names. Names like disappointment and loss and regret and failure. And there's even one called Everyone Laughs at You. Scared of those monsters. Very scary, Timmy."
"Wow," said Timmy.
I didn't realize there were scary monsters like that. Maybe we should stay where we are." "Yes," said Susie. "That's what I was thinking, too. I was thinking we should stay right here. You know, let's just stay exactly where we already are and not go see the thing that could be better, the amazing thing over the mountain. Let's just stay here." Years later, Timmy and Susie were super old. They were in a nursing home. That's how old they were. They're so old. They're eating. Actually, they just kind of sat around and mostly ate pudding together without their teeth in the cafeteria. And Timmy leaned over to Susie.
Hey, Susie,
said Timmy.
Yeah,
said Susie.
You're my bestest friend. My bestest friend ever, said Timmy.
I know, said Susie. Obviously, we're super old in a nursing home together, eating pudding. Of course you're my bestest friend, Timmy. Get to the point. Sorry, said Timmy. I apologize. Hey, Susie, do you remember that one day when we saw the fireworks over the mountain? They were so amazing, so incredible. Do you remember that day? And then we decided not to go over there because of the monsters. Do you remember that day where we decided the best idea was to stay right where we were? Do you remember that one time we chose to stay instead of go? We chose to do nothing different. Of course I do, said Susie. Timmy, that was an amazing day. That concludes our story called Said No One Ever. Of course not. Of course no one's ever said that. No one's ever gotten to the end of their life and said, man, I'll never forget that time I didn't take a risk. I always remember that time where I was exactly down that one day where I said, you know what? Good enough is good enough. I'll never forget that day I decided to stay instead of go to the new place, to the better life. No one's ever said that. It's never happened. Ever happened. This doesn't quite fit in the bookshelf here. Just put it right there. But listen, it's the life most of us live anyway. Why? It's because we're scared of monsters. We are. Now, you might remember being scared of monsters as a kid. I remember this. It's actually a phase that every kid goes through. My oldest son, Ben, is in this right now. He's 10. And he wasn't scared of the dark before. It just started for him. One of the things we found out that's actually been comforting to tell him is that it's normal. See, it turns out that nearly every kid, right before they hit puberty, has this moment where they figure out there's pain and there's danger in the world. And it's beyond their control. And it manifests as being scared of the dark because there's monsters in the dark, things I can't see, things I can't control. And they get freaked out at night. You know, I could be out there. Didn't feel that way before, and now they are. Just hadn't pieced it together yet. The world is full of scary monsters. Now, you and I tend to think because we now sleep with the lights off and we don't believe in the boogeyman or whatever, that we're not scared of monsters. But see, that's not entirely true. Yeah, we're not scared of the monsters under our bed or in our closet. But see, the fear doesn't disappear, usually. It just shifts to other monsters. Like, yeah, Kyle, you don't tell me about monsters. So it's Democrats, am I right? So it's Republicans, so it's immigrants, all them, right? I mean, they're the monsters, the problem. Let me be really clear up front. Monsters in your path are never people, never. Ephesians 6 says, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. It means if it's a person, it's not your enemy. It's not the monster in your way. Never has been, never will be. The real monsters are things like potential failure, or the monster of rejection, or the monster of what if it doesn't work out, or the monster of loss. And I'm telling you, it's our fear of those monsters, sometimes even at the subconscious level, that tend to be the biggest thing holding us back from the full life on the mountaintop that Jesus offers. You know, when you follow Jesus, he doesn't actually offer to take you around the monsters. We're just going to go around the monsters. No. He says, I'm going to take you right into their teeth. And I hate saying this. Listen, churches haven't always been helpful fixing the problem. I know because I went to every flavor of church as a kid, every single one of them. Catholic churches, charismatic churches, Pentecostal, Methodist, Presbyterian, interdenominational, non-denominational, extra-denominational, probably Christian missionary alliance, Calvary chapels, the hippie one, everyone. I've gone to vineyards. I went to every single kind, all of them. There's always differences with them and whatnot, but the message was always the same. Pretty easy to pick up on. Good boys and good girls are the ones who sit still. When the song's going, you know, even those super boring songs, you just sit still. Or sometimes you stand still. Or sometimes you kneel still. But the point is, you're still. Did anybody else pick up on that as a kid? To be good meant to stay still. Problem for me, I was really bad at sitting still. I'm still very bad at sitting still, which led me to conclude that I must be bad at church and bad at God. That's what I'd kind of figured out. And one day they started talking about heaven, which gave me like a kind of a renewed sense of hope, because I thought, well, okay, well, I want to stay in church forever. I can go to this cool place called heaven.
What happens there?
Well, they started by telling us about what it looks like. It's got white puffy clouds. Cool. Streets paved with gold. Somewhat over the top, but, you know, okay. I was hanging in there to find out, like, what do you get to do? Surely it's not sit still, right? Like, you're probably playing video games, Nerf wars, sports, maybe, like, some epic battles or something cool. No. Not that I'll get this. They told me if I was really good, someday I get to go to heaven. And when I got there, I get to sit still and sing songs. Other times, stand still and sing songs, but basically just lots of stillness and singing boring songs. So I wasn't really super into that. One morning at church, I've been sitting still in the service for, you know, an hour and a half with my parents, driving very hard, doing very badly. Finally, the service ends. We go out to the lobby, and my parents decide, let's start talking to people. So now, sitting still to standing still next to them, and I just could not take it anymore. And then I saw it. It's my solution. It's over there on the wall. It's this tiny red box, about like this, right this, with one handle and one word on the handle in all white. It said pole. You ever seen one of these red boxes? Just like mounted on the wall, different places, red boxes. There's other words about like fires and emergencies. Whatever that was about. Didn't read that. Skip that because pole was shouting my name. It's like, Kyle, I'm here to save you. I had no idea what happened when I pulled it. I just decided I have to pull this. So I snuck away from my mom. She's not paying attention. Snuck over and I reached and I pulled. Now, if you've never pulled the fire alarm, let me tell you, it is amazing. Sirens start going off. Everyone starts running around. Then these awesome, sweet fire trucks show up. It was incredible. Like I thought I had solved the problem. No more stillness. Now finally there's something exciting happening. But for some strange reason, all of the adults were like the opposite of thankful. And they seemed to think that I caused a problem. And they got very, very mad at me. Like, so mad at me. I was certain then that I would never get into heaven. But that was okay, because, you know, then it's not fun anyway. Now, to this day, some of us think that's what a godly life is about. It's about, you know, just sitting still, playing it safe. Just keep your arms and your legs inside the ride at all times, just like this. And we think that God walks around the quiet circle and just hands out the full life to the good boys and girls who can sit still. It's that you're doing so great. Here you go. So he just says, oh, and the full life is for you, sitting still, not taking any, oh, this is so great for you. That's what we think. No. Listen, I wish somebody had told me this decades ago. The full life doesn't magically get dropped into your lap. The second you get baptized or say yes to Jesus or you decide to sit still and be really good at it. No. The only way to get the full life is to go up the mountain and risk facing all of the monsters on the way. The good boys and girls who Jesus leaves a full life, they're the ones who don't sit still, who refuse to settle for where they are, who are willing to risk the monsters. If you right now in your life, you're in a spot where you're like, I wish this was better. I can imagine better. I can see better. I just don't know how to get to better. Awesome. You're halfway there. Don't let the monster stop you. Look, I get it. I've been scared of monsters too. I actually had a monster I was scared of. It was called the monster of people are going to laugh at you and make fun of you because I was scared of public speaking. You know, people now, they see me doing stuff like this or speaking on stages and they're like, oh man, that must be easy for you. I hate public speaking. I can never do that. You're just one of those people. You know, the people who just don't have a problem with it. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I used to turn red in high school when the teacher would call on me. Kyle, do you have the answer? Just beat red. I hated it. Anything that was public, that was attention, awful, hated it. So how am I here now? It's because the full life that God has called me to happens to include public speaking. And I had to learn how to face down the monster called fear of looking stupid and let Jesus take me right through its teeth. For years, I avoided it. What I'm hoping today is that I can help you skip that step, the avoiding part, for years. We can skip right through that. But the first thing you have to understand is this. The full life is the riskful life. The full life is the riskful life. They're the same thing. And the risk facing the monsters in the way. See, monsters live on every single mountain worth climbing. Every one of them.
if you want to get to the very top of the mountain called success in life, that's the full life for you, success, you'll have to risk facing the monster called potential to fail. The full life for you looks like marriage and that kind of relationship. You're going to have to face down the monster called could possibly end in divorce despite my best efforts. The full life for you is seeing God's power flow through you. You want to see miracles happen through you. That is amazing. I'm just telling you, friend, you're going to have to face down the monster called praying out loud in front of other people. It'd be terrifying. If you want the full life of love, you got to risk the monster called loss. The mountaintop, a full life, it's different for all of us. Now, I don't even know what it looks like for you, but I do know that if you follow Jesus, he'll take you right to those monsters, right into their teeth. It's how God has always worked. The Bible has two basic parts to it, and they're kind of like parallels. And they kind of mirror each other in lots of interesting and different ways. Now, the Old Testament parallel to the full life is the Promised Land. The Promised Land was a rich land that God promised for his chosen people, Israel, just like Jesus promised the full life to his followers. Now, the story of their journey to the Promised Land is called the Exodus. Maybe you've heard that word before, Exodus. The literal meaning of it is the road out. It's the road out of the empty life, the not full life, to the full life. It's the journey to the Promised Land. It parallels our journey to the full life. But see, the Israelites, they completely missed it. Like totally missed it. See, they didn't know that the full life is the risk full life. They didn't know that the Promised Land was the risk full land. They thought that they would just kind of walk right into it. A beautiful, empty land, just kind of still, quiet, no risk, no work. I always imagine this would be like to buy a new house. I've always bought the old ones with the plumbing that's broken and leaking and whatever. I always imagined you buy a new house. They put like a ribbon across the door. You just cut the ribbon. You walk right into your new house. Just me and my house. Nice and quiet and still. Perfect, right? Nothing could be farther from the truth when it comes to the full life or the Promised Land. We're going to pick up the story at the point where God actually told Moses, their leader, to send spies into the Promised Land, to go kind of spy it out before they go over so they kind of knew what they were getting into. Numbers 13 says this, "Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. And he said to them, go up this way into the south and go up to the mountains, the full life, the top life, mountaintop, and see what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps, you know, like easy to knock down, or strongholds, fortresses, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests or not, maybe it's a desert. And hey, be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land." Moses' instructions are very specific. Go up to the mountains, go look at the life that we can have up here, check it out, and let's make a pro-con list. People. Are they weak? Are they few? Camp strongholds? You know, weak, strong, like, what's going on? And the land, is it good? Is it rich? Is it forested? Is it deserted? Like, how is it? And hey, listen, no matter what you see, be of good courage. Don't worry. And bring back some of the fruit. Which is an odd request, right? Like, why would you bring back fruit? It's because God wants them to see the land is better. It's sweeter than where they are. It really, really is. Here's the proof. It's like dangling a carrot. Do you want this? Awesome. Come this way. It's right over here. So the spies go out. There's 12 of them. They spy. And pretty quickly, they go up south, just like you said, up into the mountains. And then they see something. Something terrifying. Numbers 13 says this. "And they went up through the south and came to Hebron. Ahiman, Sheshai, and Talmai, the descendants of Anak, were there." Now, I know this doesn't seem like it. This is a fascinating scripture. And it's actually what happens to you and to me. Now, the spies go out. The land is full of fruit. And there's a better life waiting. But before they can see it, they see monsters. The descendants of Anak. Now, this means nothing to you and me. But to them, they were terrifying. These were giants. The descendants of giants is what these men were known as, which mattered a ton back then because warfare was all about swords and spears. You know, like, how far can you reach? And if you can reach further, that's pretty super helpful. From that moment on, the spies, these monsters are all they can think about. All of it. So they come back and they start talking. You know, the land is awesome, but we've got some issues. Here's a fact. They were surprised
when they saw the monsters in their way. I don't want you to be surprised. See, your promised land, your full life, well, I don't know what it is. I know this. It is already occupied. And not just occupied. It's already occupied by strong and many who live in what look like impenetrable fortresses. Spies come back to give their report. You know, the Israelites didn't know this. They weren't prepared for that. They didn't know it. And 10 of the 12 spies say, this is a bad idea. There are monsters over those mountains, and we should not go. This is their report in Numbers 13. They say, we are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants, the descendants of Anak. They came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. Say, there's monsters over there, guys. We can't possibly do this. And now, did you notice they didn't just give the report? They kind of inflated it a little bit. See, the verse we read earlier said there was three guys, three giants, three big guys they were scared of. Oh my gosh, we might lose. That's the monster behind those men. What if we don't win? What if we lose? It's risky. But they inflate it and they say, no, actually, it's all the people. All the people are huge. And the people, the Israelites, they refuse to go in the promised land. So we're not going to go. God, we're not going to go. We're going to stay. God's response to Israel, he punished them with 40 years of wandering in the desert. 40 years. In fact, he said, every person who's over 20 years old, you're not going to ever enter the promised land. Except for the two spies who didn't agree with the rest. Talk about them more in just a little bit. But I don't want you to miss this. What was God punishing the Israelites for? Maybe you've heard this story 100 times. You never asked this question. What was he punishing them for? It was fear of the monsters directing their steps instead of him. It's fearing the monsters more than they wanted to follow him to the full life. It is said simply, staying instead of going. Throughout scripture, the heroes of the faith are commended for going, not staying. The exact opposite. All the heroes of the faith, even the original guy, Abraham, he's like the father of this entire nation. Here's what Hebrews 11:8 says. It says, and he, Abraham, went out, not knowing where he was going. This is a mark of all heroes of faith. You go before you know. You and me, we like to know. And then go. Step one, know, be sure, be confident, clarity, certainty, then go. God says, no, I want you to go before you know. Go before you know. That's what all faithful people have always done. Go before they know. Jesus isn't saying, do you want the full life, the abundant life? I promise you can have it. Just stay until you know everything. Just stay where you are until you can figure out the way there on your own. It's not what he's saying. He's saying, go. You know, go is one of his favorite words. You can do this search for yourself. You can go to Google and just type in Jesus and go. You can find all the places in the Bible where Jesus says the word go. You'll find over 100 results. Here's just a few of them. Matthew 11:4, he says, go and tell John what you hear and see. Luke 10:37, you go and do likewise. John 4:50, go, your son will live. Matthew 8:13, go. Let it be done for you as you have believed. And then Matthew 28:10, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee where they see me. And finally, Luke 9:60, but as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Go. Now, if you do a search for Jesus and stay, you'll find four results. Four. And they're kind of all like this one. Luke 12:35. Jesus said, stay dressed for action and keep your lamps burning. Stay dressed for action. His stay is like, why stay? So you're ready to go. So why is it that you and I think that God's pleased with our caution? Why do we think this? If you want the kind of life that only God can offer, if you want the maxed out hope, the maxed out joy, the maxed out satisfaction, you have to go to the lands where the monsters live. You have to. As a church, we've been going for more than 25 years. It's actually the thing that brought me to Crossroads more than anything. I saw a church who wasn't scared of the monsters, who wasn't afraid to go, and get this, told me that I could go too. And for 25 years, we've been going wherever God said to go. You want us to tackle poverty in our city, God? Yeah, we'll do that. You want us to tackle problems overseas? Yes, God, we'll do that. We recently had our 25th anniversary, and we decided there was no better way to do it than to take a risky step and to give away $2.5 million to amazing places like the CityLink Center.
For our 25th anniversary, we wanted to bless a number of our reach-out partners by giving away $2.5 million over 25 weeks. We want to bless as we've been blessed.
I seen like a lot of my family members or my friends that are either dead or in prison still to this day. I was born to it.
And my mom struggled with addiction and whatnot, so she wasn't always there. Grew up without a father figure.
I've been on my own since I was 12. My mother was an alcoholic. My father was self-absorbed.
And with the need for child care and the money, I didn't have it.
Poverty is a very vicious demon, and it really robs people of their humanity.
That's it. I mean, I wanted somebody to care. I needed somebody to care.
And so Crossroads joined a group of churches and social services who were imagining what could it look like for us to approach this massive issue of poverty in our community in a different way. That idea took shape and formed, and it became known as CityLink Center.
And I look up and see that sign, it brings tears to my eyes because I remember when we wrote it on a piece of paper.
And then I had a friend, a role model. He goes to Crossroads. He would show up and take us all to church. And he was like, man, you should check out CityLink.
CityLink Center in the West End, a one-stop location for social services, academic and training classes, counseling, clothing, optical and dental, and family programs, all under one roof.
When I came to CityLink, everything changed. You know, they gave me an outlook, like, you can do this.
CEO is Center for Employment Opportunity. They help people that's been to prison or in and out of prison get jobs, better their life, start a new journey, I guess.
But it's good to have somebody there to guide you, you know, when you don't know what to do or when you're unsure.
Finley Culinary is a 16-week program. You do 4 weeks, basic knife skills and just the basic skills in general.
She knew that she wanted to own a home. She knew that she wasn't the best budgeter, but she was willing to learn.
They just reach out to people like me. Like, basically, like people that got lost souls. Lost souls. They don't know where to start, don't know what to do.
After I graduated Finley Culinary Training, Chef Anthony came up and approached me, and he was like, hey, I want you to go here. Like, I think this is a perfect fit for you. And then he was talking about Fausto.
But they change your whole mindset. Like, they change the way you think down there.
I'm stronger. I'm wiser. I'm more aware. I'm debt free. I'm in a better place.
Getting up, waking up, going to work, progressing myself in life. I feel like somebody. Yeah, I feel like somebody.
That's incredible, absolutely incredible. My wife and I got to be part of the community who was rallying around CityLink from the very beginning. It's just mind-blowing to see where it went. By the way, if you're one of the faithful givers at Crossroads, I just want to say well done. That happens because of your faithfulness, because of the risk you're willing to take and saying, God, I'm gonna take you and trust you with my finances. It's terrifying. It's a risk. But there's reward on the other side of it. By the way, if you want to join the community of faithful people who give, you can do that. We've actually made a way for that to kind of take some of the risk out of it for you. And we know it can be kind of awkward for us to say, hey, do you want to give us money? So we designed something for you to really experience the fullness of what God has for you financially. We call it the tithe test. It's really simple. Just say, if you try giving for 90 days, at the end of those 90 days, if you don't feel and experience God showing up in your life, we will give you all of your money back,
no questions asked. We've had thousands of people take it. You can be one if you want to as well. You can go to crossroads.net/give or crossroads.net/tithetest. Here's the point. To be faithful is to be riskful. Risk is actually at the very core of faith. We preachers were always telling you to have more faith, you know? Just have more faith. Put your faith in God. Have more faith. Ask God for more faith. Do you know that's the same as telling you to live with more risk? It's saying, put your risk in God. Bet on God. See, some people will lead you to believe that faith is the same as certainty, that the more faith you have, the more certain you are, that those two things are analogous, that people of great faith are the people who are very, very certain. But it's not true. Faith is not certainty. Certainty. Faith is faith. In fact, the more certain I am about something, the less faith I need. I don't need faith that I'm wearing pants right now. I can see that. I'm very certain about it. I don't need faith. There's a reason we have the two words. They're not the same. See, faith is moving in the direction that you think God has, despite not being certain. Hebrews 11:1 says, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." Now you'll see that word substance translated different ways in the English translations. Sometimes you'll see it as assurance, sometimes confidence. But I think substance is much closer to the intent. And the reason is because the original Greek word here that's being translated into English is hypostasis. It only shows up 5 times in Scripture and only once in this particular form. Its literal meaning is a setting or placing under. Things put under, substructure, foundation. Faith is the hypostasis of the things hoped for. It means faith is the substructure of hope. In other words, it's what hope rests on. But make no mistake here, faith and hope are all about the stuff you can't see, the places where you don't know what's going to happen. Long time ago, I was on a different career path. I thought I'd do something completely different with my life, and I was going after it like hard. Like I was all in on it. And then I felt like God might want me to quit and to pursue a job in ministry as a pastor. Was I certain? No. A few years later, I met this girl named Sarah, and I felt like God was saying, I know you've only known her for a couple of months, but it looks like marriage. I want you to take this step. Was I certain? No. I didn't hear an audible voice from God.
Kyle, write this down with certainty.
No, that was a risk. I was putting my faith. God, I think this is where you want me to go. And I'm going to step out here and risk. And I'm going to trust that you're going to go with me as I climb this mountain called marriage. And I'm scared of this monster called it might end badly despite my best intentions. And God, I'm just trusting you to go with me. Trusting you to walk up the mountain with me and face those monsters. I sold my house a few different times, bought new ones, like I mentioned. Never the brand new ones. That's probably a mistake. I don't know. Was I ever certain that God wanted me to sell my house, move my family? No. Not a single time. Recently, within the past year, I changed my jobs at Crossroads. I had been in the same sort of role for 15 years. I led our creative teams. I loved it. I was amazing. Loved doing it. But I felt like maybe the next thing God might have for me might possibly be leading online church. Is that certain? No, not at all. And there's monsters on this mountain called might not work, called could be wrong, could might wish someday you would just stay where you were. It's risky. But do you know what my life would be like if I had waited for certainty on any of those? I'll tell you the word that I think God would use. I think he would say I was unfaithful. I think he'd say I was faithless. I was empty. Faith is the risk of believing in God's goodness, betting on it. It's the risk. Psalm 27:13 says, I would have lost heart or hope, unless I had believed that I would see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. But I lost hope. Unless I thought, when I start to go up that mountain, whatever that mountain is for me, unless I thought that when I get there, when I face the monsters, God's goodness would show up, and through him, I'd have victory over them. That's what that means. But it's a risk. It's faith. You remember the story of Exodus we were just talking about? The spies all come back. 10 of them are like, no way, can't do this. Monsters are too scary, too risky, don't do it. And I told you that two of them didn't agree with the 10. Those two were Caleb and Joshua. See, they actually wanted to go. And they made a plea to all the people. They're like, please don't be afraid of the monsters. Believe that God is with us. We'll see his goodness in the land of living. We will. This is what they said in Numbers 14. The land we pass through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are like our bread. We're going to eat them up. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. Now, the people, they didn't listen. Caleb and Joshua, they never stopped believing. God says, you two, you're going to take these people into the promised land. And 40 years later, that's exactly what they did. Now, you got to understand, the monsters, they were still there. They were still many. They were still strong. They were still fortresses, big, scary cities, walled cities, the whole thing. That part hadn't changed. What had for the people of God? It's that they were willing to believe God and take the risk. They're willing to. God gives Joshua this pep talk. There's an entire book, by the way, on Joshua. It's a great book called Joshua, no shocker, in the Bible. It's great. It describes Joshua's journey with God leading the nation of Israel. And right off the bat, in Joshua 1, right before he's about to take the Israelites into the promised land, God gives him this like locker room pep talk kind of thing, like firing him up. God says this to Joshua, have I not commanded you? Be strong and be of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Notice it's not wherever you stay. Wherever you go. You know what they do next? They cross the Jordan River, step across, and they win battle after miraculous battle against the monsters. Again and again, they defeat cities with walls that should never be shaken, and they were, fell right down. Again and again. And here's my question for you. Do you want the full life? Do you want it? It's just simple. Put your faith, put your trust in God's ability to defeat the monsters in your way and go. Move. Take the risk. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's marriage. Ask her to marry you. Go face that monster called rejection. Ask her to marry you. Maybe it's apply for school. Restarting the job hunt. Go face the monster called failure. Go stare him in the face and say, Jesus, I need you to walk with me right into his teeth. This is the life you called me to, and I'm heading there. I will not be scared of the monsters. You say yes to Jesus, maybe you got to go face the monster called not certain. You know, maybe this whole thing for you is really about belief in him. Am I going to say, Jesus, I believe who you are, who you say you are? Have you been waiting for certainty? Friends, stop. Stop. People of faith are people of faith, not certainty. Not certain? Awesome. You can be a person of faith like me. You can do that today. You can just say, God, I believe that Jesus is who you say he is. And Jesus, I want to follow you. I'm putting my faith in you today. Simple as that. Simple as that. You know, Jesus says the same thing to you. If you're one of the people who puts your faith in him. Same thing to you that God said to Joshua. It's another parallel. He says, go, and I'm with you. Wherever you go, wherever you go. So the last thing he said before he left planet Earth, he said this to his disciples. This is Matthew 28. He says, therefore, go and make disciples of all nations. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I have commanded you. And get this, surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. Jesus said, go, therefore go, and I'll be with you always, wherever you go. So go towards the abundant life. Go towards it. I don't know, maybe you're somebody who's never, ever tapped into the power of Jesus. Maybe you're somebody who thought that God was for people who had it all together, you know, really awesome at sitting still, following all the rules. Never thought that God would be after somebody like you, people who pulled fire alarms. Well, I'm here to tell you, God is for you. He is for you. He's got a better life for you. He's got a better life than you can possibly imagine. And I know there's monsters in the way. He'll go with you. He will. Now, we are not a TV show here. This is Crossroads. We're not a TV show. I told you that at the very beginning. I also told you this. I believe God made you for the full life, and I'm here to help you find it. And if I can do that in any way, maybe you said that prayer to God today. Jesus, I want to follow you. I'm putting my faith in you. Maybe it's something else going on in your life. If I can help you in any way, man, I would love to. You can just email me. Actually, me. This is my actual email address, kyle.ranson@crossroads.net. I'll do my very best to respond to you in a timely manner. I would love to connect with you. It would be amazing. And hey, I know that God would love to connect with you right now too. He would. I encourage you right now, instead of clicking away, instead of jumping on to your next thing, just take a minute. You've made it this far to sit in prayer with God. We're going to make it easy for you. We're going to give you a song that can act as a prayer, simply telling God that you'll trust Him and you'll go. Let's sing this together right now. So what about you? What will your story be? Are you going to have a book written about your life that has no chapters about any adventure, about how you avoided risk? Or are you going to live the full life life that was about trusting God, going up the mountain to the very top no matter what. Praying that's the life you start to experience with more power this week. Thanks for being with us. We will see you next time with Crossroads.
Church should be a place where nothing is off limits. This summer at Crossroads, you'll hear from special guests about God moving in these powerful stories of uncensored truth. Don't miss it.